Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are talking season 44, but in the past.
That's right. We had episode 3 happen. These episodes have been so interesting. I mean, I spent last night talking to Phil about it, obviously, but these episodes have given these weird moments that I wouldn't expect for us to talk about on this podcast. We have some really interesting ones today, McKenna.
Yes, so let's talk about the Kane sword moment where he's just like lunging out and making moves with this sword. And there was only one like logical thought for this, and it's the only other sword in the game.
Yeah, it somehow we have gotten to the point where we have had two different types of swords as immunity idols. Our first one was, of course, the individual immunity idol from Pearl Islands, which, let's be real, is the coolest individual immunity idol you could ever win.
Yeah, it's like a sword sheath and a real sword. And yeah. I thought that was just so fun. And that's kind of one of the only, these are kind of like one of the only times that it's not like a totem or an idol kind of mm-hmm. thing. As an immunity. And then we have Fiji, which is like a stake, and that's not like an idol either. Speaking of Fiji, since we have some fake idols in this episode, we are going to be going back to episode 7. You heard it right, Celestina. Episode 7 of Fiji, where Yao Man makes the first fake hidden immunity idol.
Continue. That's right. It's an exciting thing to talk about, but one of the interesting things about this immunity idol, and it's really interesting seeing these swords, because they're both coming from seasons that were highly themed, and it's really weird with season 44. With our current season of Survivor we're getting, we have this weird, like, medieval theme permeating everywhere. Cue, you know, Jeff's gargoyle impression. But we don't really understand why yet. We don't understand why this is the theming. It's a cool theming, but it's not really built into the rest of the season. It's kind of only in Tribal Council. And with it's this.
So weird.
Yeah, and just with these immunities. But that. Pearl Islands was the first season of Survivor I ever watched live. Back, way back when. I guess that was 2003 when I was watching that. That was a while ago. That was 20 years ago. I don't want to think about that anymore.
I was sick.
I was not. And the image that always goes into my head when I think about this immunity idol, for some reason, of all the people who won this individual immunity, it's when Dara wins it.
Really? Not Burden?
Yeah, always. Not Burden, not, you know, any of the other people who won individual immunity. It's Dara. Because I don't know why. It's just such a clear image in my head.
Well, there you go. How many of you guys think Dara when you think Pearl Islands immunities? All right.
So, but before we move on from Kane, I mean, I'd be pretty remiss as the Canadian on the podcast to not mention Kane beckoning on his heritage here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Canadians have a pretty recent history on Survivor. In fact, they've only been on the last 5 seasons.
Yeah.
So we don't really need to mention them, but I have to because the Canada in me. Because our first Canadian was Tom Laidlaw.
King.
Back in season 39. Then we, of course, didn't have any on season 40 because...
Mm-hmm. Winners at War.
Winners at War. It was previous players. Canadians couldn't play until season 39. Then we had Erica. Yeah, we had Erica. And Treya, right? Treya, wait, which season was Treya on?
Next season.
Because, yeah, so we had Erica, and then we had Treya, who is technically an American citizen, but residing in Canada at the time, Omar, and Marianne, and now we have Kane. And I don't know, guys, Canada comes to play.
Well, we'll see if Kane plays more like Tom Laidlaw or more like Erica Marianne.
Homer. Well, I don't think he's really an Erica at this point. He's part of We've already gotten more content than we got from Erica in the first half of her season, just this episode alone.
True. Well, let's talk fishing, because we get a fishing moment here in this episode with Brandon. John, if you want to expand upon our fishing roots here.
So, fishing is obviously a massive staple in Survivor. It's one of the main ways that the castaways get proteins. And it dates back all the way to Borneo with Dr. Sean's Super Bowl.
One of the best inventions. Like, forget about Richard Hatch catching all the fish. No, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl that yielded absolutely nothing. But it was a Super Bowl. And Sean made it. And it was a damn good fishing pole that didn't catch a thing.
Yeah. And fishing takes this really weird role in Survivor. And I really liked the way it was framed in this episode where, you know, Brandon's going out fishing. We're getting that very positive flashback on his life about being like this multifaceted man and stuff. But at the root of it, we still have this idea of I'm going fishing because I'm a provider. And that's been like a long story in Survivor history. We obviously didn't get it for the seasons immediately after Borneo because some of them were landlocked. Or, you know, piranhas everywhere in Amazon and stuff like that. We got a little bit of fishing in that season, obviously, but it wasn't the easiest going. I think when we really think Survivor fishing, Pearl Islands is that moment where we really envision like the spear fishing of Survivor the way
spear it is. Fishing, did you say?
I did.
Don't lose the tip of the spear because Rupert will come and get you and find you and then find the spearhead.
One of the funniest things about the perception of Rupert is that he's this big, lovable guy. But whenever you're recalling
this.
Yeah, whenever you're recalling these moments about Rupert, and especially like this one, I think people forget how protective Rupert was of all that fishing gear in Pearl Islands.
Because he wanted to be that provider. He didn't want anybody else. And then it kind of became a match against like him and Burton, or, you know, who got the most fish. And like one would come back with 3 fish. Rupert would then come back with 4 fish. Got more fish, and it just kept stacking up, and everyone else in the tribe was just like, thanks.
Thanks for the fish. Yeah. Just like, so long, thanks for all the fish. But, I mean, that's what Fairplay said at one point, but...
Yeah.
Sandra said, then, so long, goodbye all the fish.
Yeah, exactly. And then we obviously can't end a fishing segment without talking about Ozzy, because this is kind of his sole role in a lot of camp life within the pre-merge and merge. And he's like, I'm going to feed you and then I'm going to vote you out. That was basically his whole shtick on Redemption Island. He was just like, I'm going to feed you, send you packing on Redemption Island and get back in the game. You'll have a nice meal before you get ousted.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Ozzy is just one of those like quintessential fisher people that you think about, the providers, because that is the role he took. And I think like we hit that stretch where Ozzy plays 3 times in 10 seasons. Like that's just what he does. He gets fish. He provides. He's that big physical threat. And we see a lot of the story revolve around that. And while it's really interesting seeing this episode of Survivor put forward this fishing segment, and we've had fishing segments about like the providing for the tribe as recently as last season. Because we had Ryan doing that last season where he was talking about, no, I'm just going to go out and fish. I'm going to get like provide for the tribe and everything, get as many fish as possible and stuff. And to see it framed in this way, where it's using the backdrop of fishing to kind of really build up Brandon as this like multifaceted character, it's a really interesting take for the Survivor editors to go with, because there are the connotations of the history of fishing in this scene, and then like the words that are being said on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love good camp life moments, and I really wish there were more fishing scenes, because you get that monologue from the person doing the fishing. You get their a little bit of their story or a little bit of how they're feeling out on the island. But now we're going to talk about the two moments in this episode where there were fake idols. This has been a theme throughout many seasons of Survivor, people planting fake idols, whether they were found or not, used or not. They were sprinkled throughout Survivor history. So obviously, Yao Man in Fiji, which we will be watching over on the Patreon. So be a patron. He makes a coconut, gives it some eyebrows, and draws an eye on it for the initials of Immunity Idol, wraps it up, and puts it back where he found his turtle idol.
Yeah, I mean, this is fascinating. We're obviously going to deep dive it more when we talk about the episode on the Patreon, but this is the first time we see a fake idol being made. It's not the first time in Survivor history a fake idol is made. There are rumblings out there that Gary Hogaboom did in fact make a fake idol after he found the idol in Guatemala. And then there's a secret scene that was released in an interview with Julie Chen, of all people, from Panama, that shows Austin Carty making a fake idol while he's on Exile with Danielle.
All right.
But never shown in the show. Yeah. So this is the first time, like, in Survivor proper, in the season as it airs, that we see someone making a fake idol. And mm-hmm. It's also the first time, it's the first season that has the Immunity Idol as we know it now.
Right.
Where it makes sense to kind of hide it this way, because the way the idol works at this point, hiding an idol here is so much more powerful. There are also two idols on Fiji, which I totally forgot.
Yeah. And then we have, you know, the likes of Gabon and Bob making his own resin and, like, the beads. And it was a really intricate piece of artwork, basically, to make this fake idol that he gives to Randy.
Yeah, and that's maybe one of the most malicious fake idols we've ever seen. Is it the most entertaining use of a fake idol? It's up there. I think there's one more that kind of competes with it. But this was mean. And like that's kind of like one of the turnoffs of Gabon, is that these people are kind of really mean to each other. And it feels like Bob's a little remorseful for it. But at the same time, it's like, you kind of scummed him here. But the artistry Bob puts into this idol, like to make mm-hmm. it look like an idol. And of course, this is him not knowing what an idol looks like at that point. He just had to kind of like make it look like something that could be an idol. Right. It's pretty impressive. And it's not surprising that Randy believes that it's a real idol. It's a lot more, it's quite reminiscent of what Matthew does with Jamie in this episode.
Yeah. And then we have Danny kind of replanting it for Matt to find, and mm-hmm. that kind of likens sort of to China, where, you know, the one plaque was pulled off, and so they just assumed the other side was also something, even though it didn't say anything on the back, mm-hmm. but it was another, like, sort of planted idol, but not really.
Yeah, Jamie's perception of this idol, honestly, fantastic observation by Jamie in China when she does this, when she realizes, okay, this plaque's gone. So I wonder if this plaque's an idol. How is she supposed to know that the other one had writing on it saying it was the idol, right?
Right.
So it's interesting, and it does kind of seem, Phil and I talk a lot about this birdcage twist, and I am going to ask your opinion on it in a second here, but we talked about how the producers are kind of trying to replicate these ideas with, like, these fake idols. They want to replicate these moments with them. Mm-hmm. And the birdcage itself kind of feels like one of these moments where it's like, it feels like that arch. And though it may not have been intentional at the time with having the two plaques, made it so that you could think one of them's a fake idol or think it's an idol when it's not an idol. It's very reminiscent to this birdcage, in all honesty. Now, of course, you don't have a letter telling you this is an idol, like we do see, like when Danny replants this fake idol here, and it doesn't look identical to another tribe's idol, so it's not like super confusing like that, but it does look exactly like the actual idol, except it doesn't have the words on it. So I actually surprisingly think this China scene is one of that relates almost the most to the situation we see with the birdcage, rather than these ones that have people actually creating fake idols.
Mm.
Now, Phil and I did talk about this birdcage and the idea of producers putting in idols, like fake idols, for the contestants to use. And it's a big debate on the internet right now. So, McKenna, where are you weighing in on this? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Are there parts of it you like, parts of it you don't like?
I don't hate it. I think people are gonna make fake idols, so why not basically just give them the tools to? I mean, they offered Debbie an idol making kit. And I kind of like the birdcage in the sense of you can basically, you can have an idol with it being as secret as possible. I think this is the most secretive with being the most open. So like how we have Danny where he takes the fake idol, wraps it in the clue and puts it back. That's perfect. Hide the key again. No one will ever know that there was a fake idol and a real idol in the bag. Because then you can just keep your idol secret and, oh, they have an idol. Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly what the producers intended with this. But I mentioned it last night that you're letting the contestants run with it here. It's like you're giving them the tools. And yeah, the tools have really clear instructions what you should be doing, but it's still up to you to put it together. It's kind of like IKEA, I would say, where it's like, you know, there's a really good diagram and it shows you what to do, but all of the instructions are in Swedish and you don't quite understand, but you think you have a good idea, and it's all about the execution.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple more fake idols we have to hit. We have Dr. Allison in David versus Goliath. She got hit with a fake idol and knew it was fake, but just kind of had to play it just to be safe. Millennials versus Gen X. I think David had killer fake idol skills, and he even like planted it in the what he found his idol in. Fooled Jay completely. Heroes versus villains. Rupert with the rock in the pocket. We see Russell in confessional being like, I know what fake idols look like, and that's one of them. He's got something hanging in his pocket. And then
I find it's so funny, like when we have these like this array of idols and fake idols. And I know you're about to speak about the other one that we haven't mentioned yet, but Rupert's rock idol. It's interesting because all of these other fake idols are being used for a completely different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They're all being used to trick someone into thinking they're safe.
Right.
Or they're being used to, you know, convince people you have an idol by showing them it. I mean, like, no, look, I have an idol. Mm-hmm. But Rupert's idol is, I just have to convince one man who, you know, thinks he's always right that I have an idol and I'm fine. And he just puts a rock in his pocket. It's just, like, such an easy thing to do. And at that stage of Survivor, when the idol's, like, it's still fairly new at this point. It's only been around for 8 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And like knowing what the idol looks like, because they've seen many be played by that point in Heroes versus Villains, just to know like the weight discrepancy, so you have to put it in your pocket, and it's like it's so obvious that it's not an idol, because who would be stupid enough to put an idol in their pocket? But it still works perfectly.
Yeah. And all right, fake idol segment. Obviously, it's just an effing stick. And this was obviously a fake idol. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts. This was a fake idol.
Ozzie didn't leave paperwork with it, right? He just put a stick there.
He just wrapped it. And that's why Eliza was like, where's the paper? Where's the, like, where is anything about this saying that this is an idol? He was just like, follow the clues and found it there. She's like, you're a dumbass. Ozzy put it there.
That's the most interesting thing. It did have a smiley face on it. Matt Miller is correct. It did have a smiley face on it. But it does seem like one of those things where it's like, how could you possibly think this stick is an idol? And yes, that's a moment where idols were incredibly new. And they had changed so drastically over those four seasons that who knows what they were going to look like. And in fact, you kind of see this degradation of idols over the years where they were incredibly ornate for a long time. And we've gotten to the point where literally a coin is an idol.
A string of beads is an idol. Like this, the effing stick, I think, and all these other camp idols kind of revolutionized the creation of hidden immunity idols. And I just want to talk upon this real quick, where Cass is being real secretive, gathering beads and like little other tchotchke kind of things on Kelly Wentworth's birthday. And Kelly gets so suspicious of Cass because it seems like she's trying to create this fake idol. But in all reality, she's just trying to make Kelly a birthday present. So like there's always this paranoia of fake idols. You know, we see Matthew cutting off cuts off beads from the torches and
Matthew.
Like
Matthew.
During Matthew, all right. And then like cloth from the flag. Like those are like alarm bell kind of things where like that set Kelly off with Cass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the interesting thing about Matthew's idol is that he could replicate it off of the idol he found. And also that he knows that the rest of his tribe knows that's what idols look like because Brandon played, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where things get really interesting in this new era, because obviously like last season we had the bracelets and we had these other items as immunity, as hidden immunity idols before, but we're getting to the point where when a silver coin is a hidden immunity idol, it gets really hard to discern what is and isn't a hidden immunity idol at that point.
I mean, yeah.
and I like that. I like the fact that we are in an era where there is distrust about advantages. I like the fact that, you know, you'll never know. If someone's like, this is a hidden immunity idol, you have to essentially believe them. Or you have to believe, I think that's fake, and then think every idol's fake. It's like this weird catch-22 they're creating, where you really can't believe anything anymore.
Exactly. I mean, every idol's an idol until it's not.
Yes.
Or
100%.
Every idol isn't an idol until it is. Whichever
it's
you like would like.
It's Schrodinger's immunity idol. This is at the same time a hidden immunity idol and not a hidden immunity idol.
Well, we're going to move on from idols, so just make sure you become a patron to hear us talk about that more. Jamie eating the worm. We're going to talk about people eating things from the island. Not necessarily the gross food challenge, which, you know, there are people eating bugs. But we're going to go more like Worlds Apart, where Mike just eats a scorpion and has tummy troubles.
Yeah, I mean, maybe don't eat venomous things. I mean, it's weird because scorpions are delicacy places,
mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming they're prepared a certain way,
right?
Probably.
I mean,
without
in the grocery challenge, they had scorpion.
Yeah, exactly. Right, like these are things that are out there. I mean, scorpions, for one, I'm not a scorpion man. They're claws and a stinger, like too many things that can hurt me at once. It's hilarious watching Mike do this. It was a small scorpion too, right?
I mean, it was like something like this.
Yeah, small scorpions are scarier. They're more venomous. They have more venom.
Jolanda in Palau eats a grasshopper. That's a lot for me.
Is it?
For me, that's like alive because it's like they got springy legs. I don't know.
Sure,
that's
I guess
creepy crawlies me. It's not like a lot if it's like already dead and like it was in the gross food challenge and like prepared, but like Alive, it's got a lot of moving parts, and I just heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, okay. Does that mean you're not a fan of like the earthworm? Because I have to imagine that wriggled all the way
down. No, over. Spaghetti.
Okay.
Right just down.
You're moving spaghetti all the way down.
Yeah. And then we have I feel like a few times people have not found termite hills, knocked them over, and gotten the big juicy big termites out of that. I believe Gabon. To mention Gabon again for you, John. You're welcome, patrons, because I did steer him away from Gabon this week, and we compromised on Fiji. So we had that, and then obviously the rats. We had Natalie being so proud that she killed a rat, and then obviously the rat from season one.
Yeah, I mean, these are kind of iconic food moments, right? Where like these aren't just like things that inhabit the island that people are eating. These are like the vermin of the island people are eating. These are the things that are pestering them all the time. It's actually kind of funny because the rats kind of equate to like crabs in a sense. Right? And we see people eat crabs a lot on Survivor. In fact, we saw someone talk about it last week.
Matthew.
Where he like reached in and like he was catching crabs and stuff. And no, Kane. It was Kane found the crab in the tree. That's what it was.
Yeah, but then Matthew grabbed it out of the tree because Kane was looking for the idol.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think about it, they complain about crabs crawling over them all the time, just like rats crawling all over them all the time. And it's like this stigma attached to the rat as being this like dirty animal.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I mean, it's a carrion animal. I get it. It eats dead things. Like, that's what it does. Crabs are also carrion animals. We just don't talk about it because they live in the ocean.
Yes. I mean, eat what you want to eat.
I mean, there's also like this big amount of granted, this is an editing thing with Samoa. Natalie White killing and eating this rat is a big deal in that season. Mostly because it's like the most content she gets as the winner.
She gets no screen time anytime else in the season. She has to do something monumentous, and that was killing that rat.
Yes, it was. The interesting thing is, and of course, this is it's a show. Survivor is a show. It's meant to entertain us. But we never see anyone doing these things alone. Like, yes, certain people eat things, are the only people to eat things, but they're never doing it alone. They're always doing it with someone, with them egging on. Like, you were talking about Gabon, and in that premiere of Gabon, we see Kenny egging on Michelle to eat the termite. And we see, but, like, it's never alone, right? It's never like, I found this. I'm going to try this. It's like Guatemala when they find like the anthills or the termites. It's one of the two. And Rafe's just like, I'm going to eat them. And Stephanie's like, that's gross. And Rafe's like, no, it's great. Like, there's this enthusiasm about eating these vermin and these insects and bugs. Honestly, I'm surprised we haven't seen more. Because you have to imagine if they like turn over a rock in the woods, they're going to find some grubs or something.
Yum. Protein. And they need protein and brain food for this next challenge. It is the classic color cube insanity cube, I believe is the proper challenge name.
Like instant insanity or something like that?
Instant insanity, yeah. It is the cubes that have multiple colors on each face. And you have to make each side only be each of the four colors. And we've seen this in a bunch of different seasons. We've been talking Samoa. It was in Samoa.
It was. The Samoa one was really weird because that was the one where they had to run out into the water and grab the cubes. And there was like an attack zone, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Like, it's weird. Also, we just told you it was on Samoa. It was in the tribal phase. Can you guess which tribe won? Because
Fo'afo'a.
Right. Because it was certainly not Fo'afo'a. That's the first time we saw this puzzle, and it took them a while, if I remember correctly. It took them like over an hour to solve this puzzle the first time it showed up.
Yeah, I don't think I'd take an hour on it. I've never actually done it. The one of the live games I played, I didn't volunteer to do this specific puzzle, so I haven't actually done it before, but I feel like it's not gonna take me an hour. Another moment that's not really all that crazy to mention, but I have to mention it because I love the one and only Edna Ma, who revolutionized South Pacific, and without her, Sophie Coach and what's his name? Albert. There we go.
There you go.
Would not have gotten to the end. So I will stand on my soapbox for Edna Ma all day, every day. But
including when she loses this challenge, right?
She did lose the challenge. But I was rooting for her all of Redemption Island. Anyway, Ozzy and Edna, it was dueled in this. And Edna was getting a lot of help from everyone else because they did not want to see Ozzy back. And it did not help. And Ozzy won the duel and was able to come back into the game.
Is this really interesting? Because I don't know if having help from outside people is useful in this specific challenge, because they can never see everything, right? So essentially, like, you can have tribe mates yelling, oh, hey, turn this, turn that, turn that. They can tell you kind of like the two faces, maybe if they're in a really advantageous position, they can see three sides really well, and they can tell you which ones, like, you have two of in each. But yelling directions doesn't help in this challenge. Heck, it almost looked like, you know, looking at this challenge didn't really help in this one. Because, yes, when both tribes, after Ratu wins this challenge in 44, and the other two tribes are both checking out the puzzle to try to solve it, right? Like, it's not like an instant they look and that's it. Because you have to look for the exact placement of the cubes. Because the levels you put the cube in is what matters in this puzzle.
Right. Because, like, your base cube could be their top cube, and copying them does absolutely nothing. But cheaters do win in Blood versus Water. We had a three-person duel here where Laura Moret helps out Tina to get Vetus out of the game to keep the moms on Redemption Island.
Yeah, and this is an iconic thrule. I don't know, what do we call these? Like a thrule, right? Because there are three of them. It was not a duel. There's more than two of them. It's going to be a thrule, right? And Laura Moret solves the puzzle quite easily. Now that I'm thinking about it, might be because she already completed this puzzle in Samoa.
Oh.
I never thought of that until this exact moment. But maybe that helped her a bit. And she's body blocking so Vetus can't see what's going on while telling Tina where to put exact blocks. And the big thing she says is make sure the one with three of the same color is on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's the easiest way to solve this puzzle. Once you do that, because of the not all blocks are made equal. and some of them have different numbers of faces that are different colors, right? Because of that, it is harder to replicate this puzzle because you don't know exactly the combination of colors on the sides you're going to get. But because Laura and Tina's puzzles were exactly the same, Laura is able to assist Tina with very direct directions. It's not like the, oh, you should try this type of directions that we see in South Pacific from the onlookers. Right. It's, hey, this is exactly what you need to do to solve this. Yeah.
And those were very handheld cubes. We have ones like, you know, Cambodia, where they're in the water and have to unhook them and like lug them into a boat. Millennials versus Gen X, you have to unlock them. And then it's also in one of the last tribal challenges, I think. Or no, the one right after the swap in Winners at War.
Yeah, and that's the one where they had to knock the You know what? Catherine does have a good point here. It's not cheaters.
I know.
It's teamwork. It's teamwork at that point.
I very much appreciated this because I would rather keep those two on Redemption Island than Vetus. But, yeah, I mean, we got Tina in the game from it, so.
Yeah, and but the Winners at War was the one where they had to knock them down.
Mm-hmm.
And then figure it out. And I believe Wendell and Michelle are the ones who are working on it.
I think so.
That sounds right to me. But I don't know. This puzzle, we've been talking about puzzles a lot on the specialist the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
This puzzle, I don't know how I feel about this puzzle because,
I mean, it can be hacked.
It's hard. If you kind of have an idea of how to solve it, you can. You can kind of throw a wrench into people's plans by, like, altering the colored faces and stuff like that. I just don't think it's that, like, good of a visual puzzle because you can never see all of it at the same time.
True. I see what that is. Yep.
But
that,
yeah, it's tough. Like, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's interesting seeing. I mean, we're pretty remiss not to talk about the challenge at this point, McKenna, as the people who podcast about the challenge on the Patreon for the last season, where they actually did this puzzle. If you remember, they did in fact do this puzzle on Ride or Dies. It was in the.
Was it in the finale that only you podcasted on?
No, it was in the mini final.
Oh, yes, that's right.
One thing we saw in this tribal immunity challenge is people were just cheating off the completed puzzle. We don't really see that a lot because in Survivor, because puzzles end challenges, right? It's very rare that we have three tribes competing in a puzzle and, like, you know.
I mean, our best reference is last season.
Yeah.
I mean, individual contestants cheat off of other contestants within, like, the puzzle phase. But, you know, there's no, like, second place to win the puzzle. So it's all, like, I'm going to look off my neighbor and hopefully I can catch up.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course, Shan did that as well in 41. But one thing I'm wondering at this point, because I think Jeff Probst said in his podcast that he likes people being able to do this. Like, it's exciting, he said, for people to, like, look at this finished puzzle and then finish it, figure out what they're missing and stuff. In the challenge, they get to the point where you, as soon as you complete your challenge and it is clear, or you complete your puzzle and it's clear, you destroy your puzzle. Are we going to get to that point in Survivor? Is that something that's coming down the line?
People have destroyed their puzzle before, at least in the tribal phase, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. Well, because, like, a lot of the times, like, we'll have, like, I think the best analogy to make here is where we tend to see it in Survivor is when we have, like, the combination lockbox,
mm-hmm.
and they have the scroll or the sheet to cover it, right?
Either the sheet or, like, they mix it up themselves.
Yeah.
Jay is the biggest blunder here to reference the covering the sheet, because he completely reveals everything to everyone in Millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, so it's like, it's just an interesting evolution of strategy when it comes to challenges in Survivor, because they haven't really allowed this type of interaction with a completed puzzle before. So I'm very interested to see if this continues throughout the season. Are there other moments? Now, of course, like, we have speculation there's a swap next week. Maybe they're going to two tribes instead of three tribes. Who knows? But I don't know. There's a lot of things that just can happen. And when you have this, when you set a precedent that it is okay for you to get out of your puzzle platform, a puzzle platform they had to unlock in this challenge to look at another tribe's puzzle platform. Like, where's the line being drawn?
Yeah. All great questions, John. All great questions. But this podcast has come to an end. We have referenced all the things within this episode. And please tune into Patreon to listen to us talk episode 7 of Fiji. Give it a rewatch and give us a listen.
And with that, as McKenna said, on the Patreon for $20 and $10 patrons, we will have the Our Survivor re-ranked for Survivor Fiji episode 7 tomorrow. Phil's recap went up today, his after show. I was on the recap yesterday instead of Alexa. Alexa will be joining Phil again for the power rankings on either Sunday or Monday. We haven't had a date yet. We don't have there's no guest nailed down yet. Well, Phil will announce that when we have the date all sorted out. And then, of course, like the video, subscribe. If you are watching Survivor Specialists and you're not subscribed, please do it. It's great. You'll always know whenever we're here, because McKenna and I have had life coming in the way and our schedule has been a little wonky the last couple of weeks. It should get normal after this, but you never know when we're going to go live. So click that subscribe button. Click that bell. You'll know when we're going live. Follow us on Patreon and, shoot us a review on Apple Podcasts there. We would really appreciate it. And with that, have a good night, everyone.
Goodbye. We'll see you next week.